Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, just dining room. Take the plastic junk off of there. Can you move any slower than this, fellas?
Hi. You must be our new neighbor. I'm Nicholas Ozaransky. Call me Oz.
Jimmy.
Hi.
Jimmy Jones.
Have we met before?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I'd remember. I got a thing with faces.
That is so weird. You look so familiar. Where are you from?
Mr. Jones, where do you want this?
Who gives a damn? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 370. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Brian. Who let this fly in here, Dunaway?
Oh, hi. Man, all the ladies in this week's Film Sack movie are smoking. Am I right? High five, guys.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, why are all these ladies in this movie smoking tobacco products? I have concerns. Oh. And Amanda Pete, more like Amanda's teats. Yeah, Ibn knows what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
You paused that so many times, even Blockbuster couldn't rewind it. Up top, brother. What? Come on, don't leave me hanging. Well, can I at least get a shout out to inappropriate mentor-student relations? Bruce Willis, 40s, hooks up with Amanda Pete in her 20s, used his influence as a hitman hero. Wow. That whole storyline just touched me inappropriately and deserves to go to jail. Overall, I give this movie 2 teats up. My eyes are up here, Randy.
Yeah.
No.
No, they're not. Your eyes are down there, it turns out. Also with us, Randy, seriously, they're still doing the fly gag, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian, and hey, how you's doing? You know these guys, right? Even though we're over here in the countryside outside of Montreal and these guys are from a different country and the internet isn't a thing yet, you know these guys. Okay, so this one is Big Brian the Head. You might also have heard him referred to as Brian Booyabase or, you know, Grinning Brian Two Knife Ib. And over here we got Scotty Boombots, also known as Scott the Trot John's the Fella. You know, he did that thing with the Romanian guys. Anyway, over here... this is my boy. This is Brian the Slice de Blasio Ten Fingers, Southern Brian the Hump Done the Menace Away Game Caselli. But you know he's never done nothing memorable yet.
Yet.
That's a big yet. Also with us and finally, Brian the Fly is our Chick in the Bucket Ibbit.
Oh, it's a fly in the bucket. Mm. All right, get ready to clap, guys. You'll know when to do it. All right, here we go. So no one told you you were gonna be the man. Your wife's a whore, you're poor, your sex life's in the can. But then you do it with... no, you have to do it there. But then you do it with Natasha Henstridge. And you're going for being a schmuck to someone deserving of this bridge. I watch the whole nine yards till the credits start to roll. I watch the whole nine yards, every spit take and pratfall. Watch the whole nine yards. Amanda Pete's topless for a third of it.
Everybody else did imagine what the movie would be like if it had been David Schwimmer, right? Like,
yeah. Right. Sure.
It's not really hard to imagine. I mean, right. They did the same thing for a while. Like, all three of the Friends guys did seem to have that.
Well, I mean,
that
but
trajectory in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But Joey would have had to play one of the Italians. Like, I'm just saying, like, everybody sees the neurotic, you know, the neurotic Caucasian doctor as.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just making sure.
Could that have been more of a trope in the 90s?
Right. I mean, could the whole thing not been like total 90s trope between how much we disrespected dentists during that time? There was such a hate for dentists during that time.
That whole thing of like a highest suicide rate of any profession is the dentist. That was like a thing I heard in the 90s a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they used it in this movie once, didn't they bring it up?
Many times. Yeah. And Rachel left her dentist at the beginning of Friends. And so, like I said, everything during the 90s seemed to rotate around what a shit job dentistry was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
Why is that?
Yeah, I want to say that there were other movies even involving hitmen. Didn't the one where the dude hired someone to kill his wife and Leonardo DiCaprio was one of the, or River Phoenix was one of the hitmen.
Oh,
oh
God.
I don't know.
I'm barely remembering any of this, but I want to say the main character in that one was I Love You to Death.
This movie,
was that it?
Oh,
this
Love
movie
You to Death. Yes.
Almost, right.
Yeah.
This movie is almost an exit to the 90s. It went, what did we love during the 90s? Hitmen and dentist. or hate, however. Yeah. And we're going to put them in a movie together, and we're going to just round out the 90s, and just that's what we're going to do.
It's I Love You to Death was actually about a pizza parlor, not a
pizza parlor owner. Yeah.
Kevin Klein deal. I remember that. 1990.
There was some other thing with a dude who was a dentist, and his wife wanted to kill him, and he was
there
like
were so
older.
Many. Like I kept thinking of Gross Point Blank and... You know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. There were just so many movies with hitmen.
Yeah,
right.
Little Shop of Horrors. Dentist. I was like, 80s, right? There was a dentist in Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
There was a time there, yes, where everything was hitmen all the time. But I am going to just suggest that Gross Point Blank be elevated from that a little bit because it's amazing, and all others quake in its shadow because that's a great freaking movie.
I gotta say,
as dentists go, the dude who sticks his tools in Dustin Hoffman's mouth in Marathon Man.
Oh my gosh, I hate
that's pretty
so
good.
Bad.
I gotta say the spark of idea that may have created this story, which is the idea that two professions, one that is totally satisfactory hitman, totally self-indulgent, versus the I accepted life as it is dentist. There is such a power for the dentist to be able to convince the police by dental records that things are different than they are. So I think that spark of the idea, it was a really good idea. It's like, hey, let's put a dentist together and a hitman together. That seemed like a really good idea, right? Mm. And then you get this.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
It's probably just because it's perceived as such a pedestrian kind of job.
I think it's important to remember as we're looking at this film that this movie is old. It's pre 9/11. It's pre phones, really, like smartphones especially.
Yeah.
No social media, all this kind of thing. Like, it's when you look at it and you're going, wow, this has aged really badly. Well, yeah, it's in a strange slice of time before the internet was really a thing. Your parents didn't have internet at this point. You know,
well,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's 2000. There was some of that going on. I mean, I'd had internet since 94, but I may have been edge case, but I agree.
Right.
I agree. It's wedged right in between what we were at the 2000 bubble of the internet where it thought it wanted to be, pets.com and 1,000 other dumb ideas that all crashed around it.
Yeah.
And right before we were like, oh, actually this is what the internet's for. And then we moved forward, and you're right, we're like 7 years from a smartphone.
Well, this is also long before certain entertainment that we all now know, like The Sopranos and Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And so It seems kind of quaint watching this movie.
A lot of people love it. Like, we got all kinds of Twitter happening last night where people are like, "Oh, I love that movie. It's so good. The sequel's terrible."
Like it. Those people are either remembering Amanda Peet or they're thinking of Analyze This.
Right. No, I got to say, I will go ahead and say I do like this movie. But defending it is going to be hard.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I like it. I like the movie.
I liked it more than I thought. This is my first viewing, so I didn't know what to expect. And I liked it more than I thought I was going to like it. I actually think some of the slapstick works. Some of it's horrible. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bruce Willis was really paying attention. I think he just sort of phoned this one in.
But he didn't need to for this. I mean, he, you know, for the character that he was kind of playing, he didn't even need to be on set. He really just could have could have had a wax dummy of Bruce Willis with his voice with a phone.
Yeah.
Has there ever been put together such a likable cast? I feel like that was like the cast.
A thousand million times more.
That's actually been a thing for the top tier of comedies for a while, where you spend way too much money on casting than you need to, right? Because like even Matthew Perry, this is the peak of his cost, right? He never cost more than in 2000, and for good reason. The guy is, you know, he can only play this one role, right? Where he's neurotic
but he does it so well.
Well, all right. I think you
should check out a TV show that was on. It was only one season, sadly, but it was called Go On, and it was really funny.
Great.
A member of a support group, and they had it was a great ensemble cast, but he's less neurotic and more just self-destructive.
What was that Sunset?
Probably more.
What was that Sunset Strip show that?
Studio 80 on the Sunset Strip. Yeah, the Aaron Sorkin deal.
Aaron Sorkin thing, and it was post. That was post West Wing. I think even post Sports Night. So and it didn't last very long. But it was all dramatic. Like it was very different for him.
For some reason, I'm thinking that began the same year as 30 Rock because they were laughing about how there were two shows about Saturday Night Live style background shows, but God, it seems like that was way newer than 30 Rock.
Yeah,
it really does.
Yeah.
The movie I wish everyone could see, and I've never found a way for anyone to see it, is called Numb. Mm.
And well, how do you know it exists then?
Because I saw it at a film festival.
Mm. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm absolutely positive. Dream? I actually went back and saw this movie a second time at the same film festival because I was so impressed with Matthew Perry in the lead role, and it's really just a character study about a guy who's a depressed screenwriter, and something happens to him and he loses all of his emotions. Mm-hmm. He becomes completely emotion free. And so the movie tries to imagine such a thing and tries to get you to examine how emotions play a role in your every minute. Mm. And Matthew Perry is actually really good in the role. But you like come away going, Matthew Perry's really replaceable. Like he's not, there's nothing about him that's special, you know? Like
I'm going to disagree. I think that his physical comedy was fantastic. He's got something about him, this very tragic, but comedic. And you can't, I don't feel like you can replace that with just anybody. He's likable. He's tragic.
He definitely does a good spit take, like better than Joey or Ross. Like he's, he's a good.
There are times during this movie that sort of thing, the double take, is kind of a little on the distracting side.
A little?
Pulls you out a little bit.
It might be that I'm a Matthew Perry apologist. It might be that I have a little bit of a man crush on Matthew Perry, and I like him a lot. And something is so comforting about his character. He was always my favorite in Friends.
He was your favorite friend.
So let's just go around the table real quick, and let's just talk about our favorite friends. And I'm going to say Matthew Perry was always my favorite friend and the one I most associated with.
Mm. I think that's pretty true. It's like
it's either him or Gunther.
Yeah.
Right.
Marcel.
This is a discussion that's been had a billion times the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yes. And it's always the same. Like different people like Chandler, different people like Phoebe, different people like Monica for different.
Who likes Phoebe?
Me. I like Phoebe.
Phoebe's adorable. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Phoebe's great.
I love Phoebe.
No one likes Ross, but that's how he was written.
I love Ross is my second favorite.
Really?
Okay, yeah. well he's written
you lost
such
me there.
Yeah, he's such a butt monkey on the script.
My favorite episodes are Unagi and the Leather Pants.
Okay, but that's when he was just a cartoon character. Those later seasons, Ross became not a person. Ross became a spastic cartoon character whose pants were down. Like he was just they broke his character. He was no longer, like, nobody was romantically involved with him. He lived by himself. He muttered to himself. He was kind of a crazy person. And when
he was neurotic, right?
Yes, and the leather pants thing was funny, but it was always at the expense of, all right, well, we're just throwing Ross to the, he's just a Looney Tune now.
No, I don't think it was a Looney Tune. I think he was also a tragic character of, Ross was always trying too hard. His character has always been someone who tries too hard.
They're all trying really hard.
They all were. And that's the thing. Like the reason you like Chandler and Joey is because they're sitting next to each other in leather lazy boys and they got a duck in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Like that. Like what could be better?
They're not trying too hard.
Yeah, no.
but they're totally understandable. Like Ross is written to be a weirdo, and like, okay, I'm just saying, everybody's had this discussion. It always reveals all of these like little different things, but these guys aren't that different, right? Like,
yeah. Right,
like
right.
when I say he's replaceable in this movie, I'm forgetting Matthew Perry is replaceable in this movie. I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of people like him.
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting. But maybe I can't see it. So give me some examples of Matthew Perry replacements that I might be able to accept. I can't see him being replaced because that level of neuroticism during the 2000 with that much slapstick, with that kind of youth.
Easy answer.
I can't imagine anybody else.
Easy answer. Paul Rudd. He could have done this. No problem.
Yeah.
I don't think he's got that slapstick in him.
No, it's not. I'm not even saying that. He'd play it slightly differently. If you're looking for somebody who behaves exactly the same, well, I don't think that's the question. The question is, is he reasonably replaceable? It's kind of like the trivia says Kathy Griffin was up for the Amanda Peet role and had it, basically.
Oh,
and then some
no.
Yeah, no, I know. That was my first thought. I was like, gosh, no, please. That's not good. And but she could have been. She would have fit in. I mean, they make people fit in. They just do it.
Right. And that's the
my
thing.
Biggest.
I just want to answer the question. Will Ferrell could have done this. Mike Myers could have done this, and he's Canadian.
No.
Yes, he absolutely.
Totally
yes.
could have. No. Yep, totally could have. I agree.
You know,
but
like
I don't think
Owen,
you guys
Owen
appreciated...
Wilson. Owen and Luke Wilson could have played that role.
I don't think you guys appreciated the slapstick. My biggest laugh moment for me, and maybe we have different comedy tastes, but when Matthew Perry runs all over the immovable Michael Clark Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
And falls behind the couch and pops up.
it's hysterical.
It was funny.
No one had that kind of energy.
You and I captured. So this is the thing that Dunaway and I do every week. We make GIFs while we're watching the dumb movies.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I always know when there's a scene that you and I share a sense for when we've captured the exact same thing and made a GIF of it. And that happened with that exact scene. And, it is funny, and it's well handled. And could you say Luke Wilson wouldn't have handled the slapstick as well? Maybe, but I'm not sure that would have broken the scene. I don't, because we don't have anything to compare it to. I think it would have just been fine. Like, and Luke Wilson's a great pick.
He's a little bit. I think Luke Wilson is a little bit, maybe a little bit too confident to play that part. I think you need someone who is self-deprecating, like Matthew
Perry. Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman might be.
He can do
maybe the closest.
No, he could do it. He could totally do it.
And there's also a thing, like Matthew Perry at times was a little bit large for this role. Like obviously they got Michael Clark Duncan in there and it made everybody look small.
Yeah.
But I was imagining America's finest comedic actor, Brendan Fraser. And then I thought, you know, he's a little too large for the role, you know, and that kind of thing. But Jason Bateman, man, he would have been great.
I think Jason Bateman would have been an okay pick, but I think it would have been a very parallel. It wouldn't have been any better or any worse. It would have been just the same. I don't think there's that many replaceable actors. It would have been very hard. I think you guys are going like, oh yeah, anybody could do it. I'm like, maybe just
I'm definitely not. I want to correct that. I'm definitely not saying anyone could play this crappy little role. I'm saying I'm absolutely saying that there's got to be a reason that this was peak Matthew Perry, and he sort of fell off, and he went back to TV a little bit, and you see him here and there.
Well, he was mid Friends here. Friends didn't end until 2004, right? Yeah,
right.
So
right, and they were all looking to expand into movies at that point in time.
Right, but his price was going up and up and up. The last 5 years of that show, he had gotten to where he would make more in three episodes of Friends than he could make on a movie.
Yeah,
you know, right. and maybe he's just that kind of person that's like rested on his laurels, right? Like he mm-hmm. remains an actor, but he's got so much money he doesn't need.
Well,
to.
Let's not forget he was horribly addicted to prescription drugs at that point. So
can we say that Jennifer Aniston was the friend that did the best post Friends?
Oh. Absolutely.
For sure.
I don't know. Let me qualify that. I agree with
you. Town was huge.
I agree with you that she was the most successful post this, for sure. However, I think in terms of quality of work, I'm giving it.
That's a different question.
I'm giving it to Ross.
Oh, really?
Everything I've seen him in, like Band of Brothers and freaking that O.J. Simpson trial thing, and he's really good in these roles and really like. You get the feeling he's really working it.
But if you say quality, I mean, then I'm actually going to say Matthew Perry, because Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip was really good. Also had Amanda Peet in it, by the way. Mm-hmm. Dolan was really good.
You're talking about three different things simultaneously, about whether they're a really good actor, whether they've made a lot of money, and whether they've made good script decisions.
Well, that's the thing. I'm saying most successful. I don't care about whether they're good or not. I mean, I think actually all six of them have... Well, five of them. Just kidding. I think Joey, you know what, Matt LeBlanc, I think, was hilarious on Episodes. I don't think there's been anything
else. Rest on your laurels, right? This is a guy who made a ton of money and went home. Like, I think I love that. I love it when they trot him out and he's got gray hair now on a like late night talk show. Yeah. And like, what are you doing? I'm working with my local theater, some kids, you know, like
love it.
Yes.
Yeah. But keep in mind, he didn't go home right away. They tried to do the Joey spinoff from Friends. Yeah.
Which I did. I was
Don't be a Joey apologist.
I liked it.
You know what? That Joey show is not as bad as a lot of other shows. I just don't think it had a chance in hell. You can't take one of the most successful sitcoms in the world, whether you like it or not, that's what Friends was, and then spin it out. It just never works when you do that. It's Enos again. It's Flo. It's a million other bad choices. It's a bad idea. But the show itself, in a vacuum, was all right.
Can we have a TV comedy, even dramedy or black comedy sequel? Anybody think of a sequel to a TV comedy, black comedy, that's as good as or better?
Grady.
Lou Grant.
Literally, it's a black comedy.
Oh,
Grady.
Lou Grant's great. I love the Lou Grant example because it was a laugh track, three camera comedy. Sitcom, and it turned into a full blown drama. Which when has that ever happened?
I know we have to go. I know we all have to go back to the 70s to find a. There's got to be a good example of
does
that.
Does anybody want to make Frasier, a case?
Frasier is a great example.
Yeah, okay, but Frasier was just here's the character. We're going to follow him along, and now here's a bunch of new great characters. And it was extremely well made, but it wasn't a Lou Grant example by any stretch.
But when you're pitching Joey, you're surely mentioning Frasier. That's a great example.
Yeah,
nobody brought up Young Sheldon.
No, but people like that show.
I've heard good things.
I know, critics are, I just can't bring myself to do it. Everybody I know who watches it says, it's really good.
I
and
can't
critics
either.
Are saying it's good, and I just can't bring myself to do it.
Does anybody make a case for Better Call Saul? Is that
that's a great
show?
Better
Call Saul's great. I wouldn't consider Breaking Bad to even be a black comedy as much as Better Call Saul is kind of a dark comedy, right?
I think they're both just twisted dramas. I don't find much comedy in either. Like they're just sure there's moments, but like Better Call Saul is way more dramatic than he was in when he was a character in Breaking Bad.
Oh, then he was in Breaking Bad, sure. But as far as humor level, I think there's a lot more of it in Better Call Saul than there is in
Breaking
Bad. You know what it is? I don't think it's more humor. I think there's just less destruction and horrificness.
Yeah.
Like it's just a normal, it's a little more of a normal thing.
Nobody's getting dissolved in a plastic bin of formaldehyde or whatever.
No,
it more
plays on like embarrassment and what are you supposed to be and dishonesty and you know that kind of stuff, and as a result has become its own thing in such a strong way. I honestly think I would make the argument there are no good prequels in the world except for Better Call Saul. It's incredibly well done. It's so good.
Oh, prequels. Okay. There's a different, slightly different topic, you know?
Yeah.
And it's hard because whenever you prequelize, you almost always have to come up with a different cast.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But so Better Call Saul is like barely able to hold it together.
I'd say way more than barely. I think it's a masterclass in how to do
it. No, I'm saying that Bob Odenkirk, is that who we're talking about?
Yeah.
I'm saying that like you can't go very far into the past. Right?
Oh, right.
He looks wrong.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Because he's not getting any younger. Yeah.
By the way, the best example of that I've ever seen is the TV show Fresh Off the Boat. Guys, you've got to watch Fresh Off the Boat. They're constantly 20 years behind current. And so they're always making pop culture references in currently 1998, but previously 97, 96. Mm-hmm. And they regularly bring the actual living person that they're talking about onto the show.
Mm.
And so you're looking at whoever, Connie Chung, for instance. And they've brought Connie Chung from the character from 97, but she's being played by the current Connie Chung.
Yeah, they do that in the Goldbergs. They had Weird Al Yankovic on, and it's harder for a show trying to do the 80s because Weird Al is in his 60s, and he looks
right.
Like,
they have to really work to make them look young.
Yeah.
But on Fresh Off the Boat, they don't even try to make him look young.
They're the 2018 versions of Connie Chung and
and whoever I'm loose, like Kenny Rogers, this kind of thing.
Oh wow,
it's
ridiculous. There's a guy who looks so dramatically different from 1998 to 2018.
Yeah,
yeah. Seriously, if like you got to watch Fresh Off the Boat, it is such a good show.
It's about a Vietnam family. Is that the deal?
Taiwan American. It's an all American family. With roots in Taiwan, and it just never stops being funny.
Speaking of all American family, anybody excited for Roseanne to make her return?
I am actually.
No.
I kind of am. Yeah.
I'm on Randy's team.
No. How are they going to explain John Goodman's death?
Here's why I'm excited. This is a really dumb reason, okay? So I'm fully owning up to this before I say it. But I'm excited because this, what I've seen from the previews that they've shown for it so far in the trailer and stuff, they're using like real, like decent film cameras, or at the very least digital cameras that don't look like shitty video from the 80s. And I hated the way that old show was filmed. And that's a dumb reason to be excited, but I could never watch the old one. As groundbreaking as everyone said it was, I just couldn't make it through it. So
Scott,
I get to
they
finally
were about
see
a
it.
Working family. How could they afford better cameras?
Well, they can afford them now, and I like John Goodman. So, however they're going to explain that, I don't know, but I like him.
Of all that Laurie Metcalf Lady Bird money. That's how they afford new cameras.
She's great,
you know,
man.
I absolutely hate Roseanne Barr. It's a travesty that they're doing this.
Wow.
Like, seriously, she's a blight on the universe. But
why? What? Wait, hold on. Back it up. What's the why the Roseanne hate?
Her beliefs and her Twitter. Like, I mean, she's not as bad as like Nick Searcy or Adam Baldwin or something, but she's pretty bad.
Well, she's annoying. She's also
If I only watched shows and people who did not offend me, I would be. Not watching.
You'd watch the.
Okay. I mean, we talk about that all the time, though. Like, you definitely you don't have a level of offense that a lot of people do. You know, like you just don't. You know,
it is
like
hard. You know, you're not wrong. It's hard to separate the person from the art. We're in the process of listening to a lot of Kanye West for Soundography right now, Hammond and I.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
congratulations.
Thank you. Well, prior to listening to it, I mean, and we're listening to his entire catalog or every studio album he's released. There's a lot of side stuff. I am amazed at how much I'm enjoying it and how much I'm like, oh my God, this is really good stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to separate the Kanye kind of Twitter douchebag and you know, the online persona, at least the online persona that we all believe we know about Kanye West from the music. And once you do that, it's like, okay, you know what, I actually am really enjoying this.
Yeah, he ain't saying she's a gold digger anyway.
You know what?
Don't say the second line.
I just think that's broke. I think that's a really good example. I saw Kanye on Saturday Night Live last year, and you know, you're like, maybe I'll just fast forward through this part.
Right.
And I decided, you know what? I'm going to grit my teeth and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to watch this whole performance and see what he does. And it was spectacular. And I came away like, man, it is really freaking frustrating that he is such an incredible artist in performance. And like the next day, we're hearing about he had a meltdown backstage at Saturday Night Live. And I'm like, how is this possible? Like, how does a person be such, you know, such a good performance artist?
Right.
You know, like, and how could I, and I can't let go of it. And so it's like, it actually, in the end, I had to just say, you know what? I would rather, I'd rather not have the art.
Well, imagine if me, imagine not
like you'd sacrifice the art for the,
Wow. Then you're going to have a very bland life. Artists typically are assholes.
Here's what would happen. Imagine,
everybody's assholes.
Listen, I understand this. What if I was, if I did a podcast with you guys, it could apply to any of us, but I'll use me as an example.
You do podcasts with a Scott.
Yeah. Now, that's true.
But we're doing one right now.
Well, there's more to the story. So let's say I do podcasts with you guys, but in my...
I'm going to let you finish.
Nice connection. In any sort of outside stuff where I'm on, not on a show, and so let's say, you know, Twitter or Facebook or what other public facing I have, I spend the entire time saying... Women should be at my beck and call and make me a sandwich and men are superior. And if I started talking like that and that was my whole thing, kind of Nick Searcy style of, man, he's good on TV, but holy shit, is he a dick in real life?
Yeah,
I fully expect there would be a big percentage of people that would not be able to separate the art from the dude and they would they'd jump ship. Of course they would.
You have present evidence of this.
Yeah. No.
You're going to a pretty extreme example, though. I mean,
it's not even that extreme because I'm pretty open about some of my stances on certain things. And if, for example, if you know somebody out there is look, my hatred of Trump knows no bounds.
Sure.
And so that's enough for at least a handful of people who really like the dude to say, "F that, I can't listen to your shows anymore."
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it happens. Where we get to the scale of, all right, you're a super well-known Hollywood-y type, you know, whatever, and you make movies I really like or whatever. Let's say you're a big comedian fan and Roseanne really shaped the way you thought about, you know, comedy middle-class style comedy, that sort of stuff, because there's no doubt she made an impact with her, you know, her early stuff. But you listen to her now and you think she's kind of insane. Like, it's hard. It's a hard call to say, well, I kind of hate what you're saying right now, but I sure like all that stuff you made. Like, I don't know. It's hard.
It's a lot easier for me to watch. I could still watch Justified a lot easier than I could go back and watch House of Cards, for example. You know, I mean, there's a different level. There are levels of this. I don't know what level Roseanne is for you, Randy, but it does sound like it's a pretty heavy level.
It's like a 10 on the hate scale.
But I think there's nuances for everybody, right? Like Roseanne has a cameo role on the TV show Cristela, which makes it sound like it's current. Cristela had one season.
I've never even heard of it.
So you've heard of Cristela Alonso?
Sounds like a drug to me.
No.
Okay. Well, Cristela Alonso is a stand-up
of the Long Island Alonzos?
She's the first... She's the first Latina to ever have her own starring television show.
All right.
And it's amazing. It's like it's really funny.
But only lasted one season.
It only lasted one season, and that says something about audiences for such things.
Mm. Even the Jane the Virgin, because that's got a Latina lead. Actress.
Oh,
that's
right.
Lasted like 4 or 5 seasons, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, fine. Make your argument. Let me come back.
Holes in your enchilada, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. So Roseanne has like a very minor character that shows up in an episode and then repeats in a couple more episodes, and it's great. She does a great job. She's funny. She plays the role right. And this is like Nick Searcy in The Shape of Water, like. I hate Nick Searcy. I think the universe would be better off without him. But his role in The Shape of Water is exactly the perfect thing. Like, I hate that character too.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So, if, you know what? I totally see what you're saying. So maybe if, like in stuff where, see, I don't want to use Kevin Spacey because I think his stuff goes far beyond just being a dick.
Well, he's also the star of
anytime,
that.
Anytime you go from speaking ideas to actually exploiting, that's a different level.
Nick Searcy's like, never going to be the star of anything. He's always going to be a secondary character, and I think that counts.
He's actually trying. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Scott doesn't know that Nick Searcy's trying to star in a movie.
No, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's been trying his whole career. I'm saying that up till now, I know him. The only way I know Nick Searcy is secondary characters. That's it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, he's not as much of a dick on Justified. He's trying to be a likable guy in Justified. So you'd have a bigger problem with that than, like you say, for Shape of Water, where he's playing the kind of guy you expect him to be from his social media.
Maybe that's the way it should be. So Kevin Spacey can only play perverted rapey guys from now on.
We found the right roles for Kevin Spacey moving forward.
Yeah. I can almost guarantee you that
wouldn't that just be the best punishment? Like, for all these guys who like are you know, coming out in this whole like the Time's Up and Me Too movement, like, all right, well, you can still act, but now we're limiting you to only play roles of the kind of thing you did. So
oh my gosh, dude, can you imagine?
That'd be the best punishment ever. So Kevin Spacey, we've got a role for you. You know, the first 18 minutes of the film, you thrust yourself onto the other male lead.
Yeah, you take advantage of take advantage of a 14-year-old, and then the rest of the movie you get the shit beat out of you by people who are mad. Yeah, like there's your punishment.
I think we're all
as we're recording this, we're all basking in the Schadenfreude of Martin Shkreli crying in his yesterday.
Right.
You know, like ultimately these are really impactful problems that mean a lot to a lot of people, and you can't solve them by liking or disliking individuals. You know, but Roseanne is just one of those things where it's like, this is a great test case, even to know if there's a problem. Talk to 10 people and 9 of them won't even know that Roseanne is problematic.
Yeah.
Well, I don't follow her on Twitter.
Yeah,
and I've got to say this also. I never saw us talking about the people we hate in a movie that is starring so many likable actors. I mean, have any of these people out of the primary five had anything Matthew Perry's drug.
So Michael Clark Duncan was married to Omarosa.
Yeah, that's true.
But do I hold that against him?
Engaged, because I said the same thing and Tina corrected me. No, they were just engaged.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I sit corrected. Thank you.
I
miss Michael Clark Duncan. He passed away in 2000. Yes. What was it? 2005? It was longer than I thought. 2012?
Yeah. 2012. Yeah. That guy was great. I loved him.
Yeah.
He's great. Also, you know, and boy, he and Bruce Willis were kind of on the same trajectory, right? Armageddon together, Sin City together. Mm-hmm. I guess Clark Duncan was Kingpin and the Daredevil.
Yeah, totally was.
Right.
Thing.
Yeah, he was good Kingpin too. I liked him. It was different. It was a kind of a different take than like what you got from the series and certainly from the comics.
For sure.
He was good. Yeah, he died too soon. What a beast of a presence that guy is on screen. Just like freaking monster.
You know, now that I think about it, it's not really a good complaint to say he was married to an idiot. Like, like there's a lot of couples out there where they are diametrically opposed in their beliefs. I love them like Mary Madeline and James Carville, because in that relationship, there's someone for everyone. You can think one or the other is the idiot in that example.
And is this almost art imitating life, because the entire time Matthew Perry's character is struggling through this movie because he made concessions in his life by marrying this French Canadian woman and agreeing to working with her father. And just doing everything that the prototype of not going all the way.
Submissive.
Submissive, exactly. And this movie is titled The Whole Nine Yards, which is to means to actually go for it, you know, to for the whole thing. Go and so way, at the yeah. end, his character changed and he went for it and he found love.
What is this in what amazing? Is this in meters? What, how many yards is it?
Nine. So a meter and a yard are about the same. The story I've always heard is that 9 yards was the length of a clip of shells for some kind of gun.
Right.
And,
right. Right.
And so when
the bandolera that you'd put on when you in an airplane dogfight.
Yeah. Something that was mounted on.
No, I didn't know that. I thought it was like a football reference or something.
The other, well, there's been three. It's funny because I used to have a website called Ask Brian and asked, you know, people would ask questions about like, what's the origin of this phrase? And da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And whole nine yards I had to do some research on. And there were three different kind of origin stories for the phrase.
Can I interrupt real quick? What year did you have that up there on the internet? When was this?
Oh, like 2000. Maybe 2000.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. No, that was a good time for it. Because there's no Wikipedia yet. There's no, like, I right, totally get why that would be a thing you'd do. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly.
Anyway, I was just curious.
It had a great logo, too. Like, the A was a question mark. I'm really proud.
Right. Did it look like Ask Jeeves, but it was you? Is that?
Kind of, yeah. I still have the domain, too, actually.
And look who's still around and Jeeves isn't. Yeah.
Are you sure about that? AskJeeves.com.
Yeah, Jeeves died in 9/11.
Jeez
Louise.
Sorry. Go on.
So the three origin stories that I found for Whole Nine Yards. One is that bandolera with the bullets in there. And when you take down your opponent, you were said to be giving them the whole nine yards if you used up all of your ammunition on one enemy. Right. Number two, the one that I think is probably the most likely is it takes 9 yards of cloth to make an expensive suit, like a really good suit.
Okay.
So you're giving somebody the whole 9 yards, making them a suit. And then there's 9 yards is the amount of sidewalk that you can make with a full load of cement in a cement truck.
Oh,
that's BS.
Is it? That was another one that came up, though.
I love
it was
that
like
one.
Being a possible origin story.
They all sound like BS, though, especially the suit. Especially
I think
the suit
sounds the most probable.
It
I
sounds
like
the
it.
Least probable to me.
To me, the one, your first like, one, you know, is the one that
the,
I think
but,
is
the But the term originally was seen in writing like around 1880s and the early 1900s, in a time when everybody, that's what you did, every man had a suit, right? So I mean, that seems
that would be
possible.
A desirable.
Right, tailors, you had tailors, yeah. They had tailor-made suits.
And... Give me the whole nine yards, see? Yeah, they'd say.
I guarantee.
Yes, that's exactly how everyone spoke.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to have the suit by Friday. Say, yeah.
And speaking of speaking, I wish no one in this movie had affected an accent. That should have been out.
Oh, Kevin Pollak. What about his?
Are you
his
complaining
Yimmy?
About Roseanne Arquette's accent?
Yes, I am.
It was
yes.
so bad.
It was spot on.
It was
it's
so
not
bad.
As horrible.
So bad. Getting a Russian actress, or not Russian, a French Canadian actress to play that role would have been too much hassle. Apparently, she.
And I'd like to believe that they asked Harland Williams to do a Canadian, and he's like, "No, I'm gonna just talk how I talk."
Yeah, I'm just
let's
be
just
like
talk
me.
About Harland Williams for a second.
Yeah.
He is a treasure. What he is. He
is
a treasure.
He's absolutely underappreciated, underused. Not just in this film, but I mean,
he could have actually played the role that Matthew Perry played.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
he's actually got that kind of
know.
Energy.
Do you think he's lead actor material though?
Maybe then.
I don't think that would have drawn people like to the theater. But could he play the part?
There was some Leonard Part 6 space.
Half Baked. He was great in that.
Yeah, Half Baked.
Oh, Rocket Man. Rocket Man is the thing.
Oh, Rocket Man. Yeah.
Oh, Rocket Man is garbage.
Oh, also, if you've never seen Fudgy Wudgy Fudge Face, that.
I don't
I get
know.
One of those every time I go to a.
You guys have to see the cover.
I don't know what that is.
You have to see
that?
The cover art because his face is next to an alien's face and he's got on some teeth prosthetics and they're not only buck teeth, they have a gap. Between them, and it's just
fudgy,
the most amazing.
Fudgy, wudgy, fudge. Oh, okay. Oh,
fudgy, wudgy, fudge face.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Look at that, dude.
Oh, that's a new. Oh, no. 2010.
That's
yeah,
a
that's
10.
A
yeah.
Roughly recent thing.
Yeah,
wow.
Ish. Mm. Yeah. Oh, what are these teeth he's wearing? Gosh dang it, dude. That's horrifying. I must
like
know
this,
more.
I like the IMDb thing also, by the way. It says people who like this also liked Dahmer versus Gacy.
and
It's not much. There's not many things that other people liked.
Oh my gosh, look, is it an alien movie? What is this?
It is. A UFO crashes to Earth. The first human the aliens meet is a hillbilly, always Ibbot's favorite, named Elmar P. Fudge, the dumbest man in the world.
Wow.
Hmm.
Huh.
Well, this is definitely
and of course, nothing says dumb like hugely oversized teeth. Front teeth with a gap. Right.
Cartoonish front teeth. Amazing. All right.
Who else? I'm just looking to see if this has anybody else that would make this like film sack worthy. Andy Dick, which is kind of like a.
Oh, yeah.
It's usually
I'm going to watch this regardless.
You think it's actually streaming anywhere?
If I can find it, I'm watching this piece of trash.
Dear Redbox, please carry the movie Fudgy Wudgy Fudge Face.
Delete.
How did we get here? Oh, Harlan Williams.
Yeah, Harlan Williams.
Yes!
So I just like, he's such a trope, and it's like, it's almost like somebody writing this movie was like, we're going to add a trope to this and make him actually a cop. Like, why? Why did you do that? We don't need the extra layers of tropes.
Yeah, that's true. There was no reason. There was nothing else except for the guy to say, oh, one of our guys is currently casing the tulip, and then we find the
guy. I tried to understand that as well. I tried to figure out why this triangle existed. I couldn't figure it out. It was just weird.
They did not spend enough time with that. Like, it's literally like, oh, I met my neighbor, I recognize him from a thing, suddenly I'm all wrapped up in this shit. That was weak in this movie, in my opinion. The whole way that they just got went from I shook your hand as a new neighbor to I'm now an accessory to all of this crap is stupid.
Well, and you're used to these TV shows where, you know, Eddie Izzard moves in next door and you spend 17 episodes finding out that he's not who you think he is.
Yeah,
you know?
That takes time, that stuff, usually.
For sure.
And movies
are
hard.
By the way, just one quick thing more about Harlan Williams before we completely get away from him. The dude has probably one of the best agents in Hollywood. He has 82 credits since one of his first appearances, Dumb and Dumber, where he drinks Jeff Daniels' pee.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I also just want to say that what Ibbot said before we get away from Harlan, we can never get away.
Not truly.
You could try.
Yeah, not truly.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
So, all right. Well, that's good. What was our point? We had a point. This movie. This is a movie.
Yeah.
We're talking about
it. Likeable cast.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's some trivia here. There's some trivia here that says Bruce Willis. Now, I don't know if this is true, but, you know, IMDb, take it for what it's worth. Bruce Willis agreed to guest appear on Friends for free, and because he lost a bet to Matthew Perry during filming, is an urban legend. Okay, so it's not true. Okay. People Magazine Star Spotlight 2000 states Willis agreed to guest stint on Friends simply because he and Perry thought it would be fun. News outlets mistakenly reported on the rumor. Willis was in fact paid for the role, including syndication runs, but donated the money to the American Foundation for AIDS Research. AIDS Project Los Angeles, the Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation, and the Rape Treatment Center and UCLA Unicamp for Underprivileged Children. So, if that's all true, well done, Bruce Willis, giving your friends money away to good causes.
Yeah,
I like it. Like also, speaking of Bruce Willis, has any man under, 70 ever wore his pants as high as Bruce Willis does?
That was really funny. That was like his entire look, his hat, like it was very funny.
Silly. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I don't like that hat.
It's like a Jersey, you know, very Jersey mob boss looking kind of thing. I felt like it fit the character.
I feel like it fit. But it just seemed like it was a little bit higher than normal. I mean, there's high. And then there's touching your nipples. You know,
how many?
Why even wear a shirt?
How many Bruce Willis movies are there where he plays a hitman? I think there's this. There's The Jackal. Am I missing anything else?
The Last Stand. We watched that here on Film Sack. He is a hitman of sorts, right?
Oh, really?
Oh, kind of. The cowboy one, right?
Well, it wasn't Cowboy, but it was early.
It was like 20s.
1900s. Yeah, it was like the 20s. So
it was like the 20s, he was in an old town, and he was kind of a hitman.
Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah,
is it weird that I still?
The music was great. Yeah. Ry Cooter is great music for that movie. That was such a well put together movie.
It
in
was.
My opinion.
Here's another bit when Oz recognizes that his neighbor is Jimmy the Tulip. The newspaper picture that says his two lips are sealed is actually from Die Hard 2 in 1990.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's cool.
A lot of those pictures
has a lot of hair. Like it's like moonlighting shots and
A lot of those pictures were from production, you know, like publicity stills and stuff.
It also goes on to say there was a remake of this film made in Bollywood. It was unofficial.
All right.
It was unofficial though, so it wasn't like, you know, sanctioned or licensed or whatever. It was called Awari Pagal Diwana in 2002. And they remade and added a bunch of music.
Better than a remake was the sequel, whole 10 yards.
I was going to ask if anyone in this room, virtual room, has watched it. Watched it.
I haven't, but
I've seen both.
The consensus is that it's shit, is what I've heard.
Yeah, but so is, technically so is this one, but it's fun.
IMDb.
Everything I heard last night when I was tweeting around, people were just like,
if you're into watching likable cast, this is another likable cast.
Well, everything,
Scott Johnson just had to watch a movie that started with close-ups of dirty teeth and middled with a guy killing a fly with his mouth.
Way too much
mouth stuff.
I had 11 things on my list of what grossed Scott out the most.
Well, for me, it was two things only, and it wasn't the one everyone thinks. Everybody online wants to say it was the fly in the hand and then spitting it out. It's not gross.
It's Matthew Perry puke breath answering the door with a head stretch.
Yeah, and also, even worse. That's not enough time between when she left and then turned around and came back and then made out with him. There wasn't enough time.
Yeah, right.
We saw him brush his teeth.
Dude, you gotta go a day or more for me. You can't brush your teeth.
He did a pretty good job of cleaning that. That's true. Did pretty good.
You don't, until someone that you're close to vomits, you don't realize how much breath is coming from the stomach.
Yeah, no, dude, I'm not kidding, and it's not enough time. I don't care if you brushed your teeth 6 times in a row and then rinsed 50 times after. Give it a day. You can't do it right after that.
I like that Scott has so many options he can choose when he gets kissed.
Yeah, Scott schedules it.
All I could think of was like, oh, species lady, don't make out with him right now. This is not good. And that's all I could ever think. I can never remember her name. I know it's Natasha Henstridge, is it? But she's
Natasha Henstridge. I wonder if she gave Amanda Peet tips on how to spend half the movie topless.
Yeah, I wondered too. I wondered if she was going to end up topless. She never did.
You know, we say everybody remembers that.
Yeah,
it's just a huge long. Was it? She was like topless in like.
Yeah, it wasn't that long.
Two scenes, and both of them lasted less than 15 seconds. I know. I counted. And it just wasn't as much as you think.
It's
now,
a
it
good
a
thing.
Impact.
Listen, this,
like
this
a
is
lot because there's time that you know that she's naked running around that house in between those two scenes.
Right, right.
Don't put your clothes on. Go, you know, in a couple of minutes, stick your head out
the window.
I
can't stop what you're thinking.
exactly. But you were sitting there watching the rest of the scene going, well, Amanda Peet's just still running around that house naked right now.
And since you know what? Now. I think this movie technically passes the Bechdel test.
No.
Because it has two different females speaking to each other, not about the love interest in the bank later.
Mm-hmm,
I actually think it shows you that the Bechdel test isn't that useful.
Wait a minute. They do spend the time in the bank talking about if she loves him or not. Should we run away with the money? I mean, what else?
Oh, for sure. But there's also, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I think technically the Bechdel test is useless because it just, you know, like this movie where you know these two conventionally attractive women are really three actually, right? Like what's her name also, yeah, she's humping Harlan Williams the whole movie. It's just like, you know, women are there to marry and have sex with. But anyway, I also remembered this movie as Amanda Peet is naked the whole movie, and I was surprised to find she's only naked once.
I've never seen it, so I didn't know what I was going to get. I had no idea. I just knew. I only knew her from Saving Silverman. That's like my whole Amanda Peet catalog. And I remember in that movie going, oh, Steve Zahn got to have burger juice off of her upper booty area. Like, I remember being all, oh, she's so good looking. I didn't know this movie existed. I probably would have been all like, hey, let's rent that one. Let's see what's going on there.
That's funny. You know, I don't remember her being topless at all. And I've seen this movie plenty of times. And then when it came up, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I think it's because it's not really sexual. It's almost uncomfortable. You almost want to go, here, Amanda Peet, we get it. You're attractive. You have nice breasts. Put on a shirt.
I think what it is, what she's doing, and I think she actually does it pretty well, is she's portraying somebody who is a little bit amoral. And by that, I'm not implying anything about, you know, whatever, but she, her great hope in life is to become a hit person.
Right.
And she'll, you know, whatever it takes to do that. None of this is like exploiting her. She's exploiting herself. She's like, no, this is a great idea. I'm going to be topless in this window and Harlan Williams ain't going to know what to do with it. Like it's like she's in charge of it. And I kind of like that compared to the way that most movies do this, you know.
But does it set the women's revolution and the hitman industry back a few thousand years when the only way a hit woman can make her way in the world is by being topless?
Yeah, and the only way to distract a professional killer is a topless woman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it's part of the larger stupidity of the movie where it's like everybody recognizes these people instantly. No, they wouldn't. I'm sorry. Not everybody in your neighborhood wants to be a contract killer, blah, blah, blah. Like the movie just establishes these things like they're just common.
And it's a weird conceit. I agree. I think, okay, so I've got a theory. I think the entire movie hinges on everybody in the 90s was trying to find their Pulp Fiction. And I don't think this is even near the mark, but this is an attempt to do that. This is like those seven.
But they got Bruce Willis.
Well, yeah, but this is like the seven bags with heads in it. What was that movie called?
Seven heads in a duffel bag.
Yeah,
eight heads in a duffel bag.
The one with Jeremy Piven.
The whole
Piven.
Nine heads in a duffel bag.
What was the one where they killed the hooker early in the movie in Vegas and then spent the whole movie covering it up, and it was a huge cast.
Every movie ever.
Jeremy Piven was in it.
'90s.
I can't remember it.
Yeah,
everybody was doing one of these, and it was the thing to do, and it was edgy, and you'd take it places that people probably didn't expect, but nobody quite figured it out. Nobody was doing quite what Tarantino had figured out how to do, and do it well. And I think we were finally starting to trail off on these, and there weren't going to be very many more beyond that. Like,
that's
true.
That's true. Most of these did kind of fall into the straight to video market.
Yeah,
like just a couple of years later.
Yeah, it's all Pulp Fiction wannabe stuff, and this movie felt like that.
It was like in a penthouse, right, with Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, and they accidentally pushed a lady of the night into a shower head or something.
Something like that.
It was kind of awful.
Was Val Kilmer in that one?
He might have been. I don't remember. This was when he was still.
And Jeremy Piven is not Kevin Pollak.
No, he's not.
I completely forgive Kevin Pollak, a comedian, for taking a role that I'm sure to him at the time was very choice. Hmm. I just don't understand where were the adults in the room to go, let's maybe try this without the stupid accent. And let's not have him be so dumb, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's
Smoking Aces is the one I'm trying to remember, by the way.
But... Right.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
No, it isn't. And
yeah, it is. Go ahead.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand how in the construction of this movie, that, like, there's a lot of things that go wrong, and you would think some of them, you know, would have been like, okay, we're gonna have the dastardly mob boss not be so dumb, not be so, you know, bad at English, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, he could have been better. I love Kevin Pollak, so it's kind of like,
I do too.
I'll just take it or whatever. In fact, he did a bunch of other stuff with Willis. Let's see, he was in what were the other movies he did together? Oh, here it is. They worked on the whole 10 Yards together. I don't know how that happened. He's in it somehow.
Yeah. The same way Dan comes back on Roseanne, apparently.
I guess so.
Also, trope alert, you have a movie with a number name in it, so the sequel increments the number even when it's not the same number as the movie.
Yeah, it also just is, it just throws away the point of whatever 9 yards means. Like, just add another yard. It's dumb.
But the whole 9 yards, too. I mean, I support their decision to do that.
I support their decision not to have a sequel. They shouldn't have made one.
I don't think the sequel to Ocean's 11.
Randy, quite contrary.
No, what? Contrandy.
I'm just saying.
Randy, quite contrandy. Come on, get it straight.
Okay, all right.
I like that. That sounds good.
Anyway, but, it's just a trope. It's just something you do.
He also was in Hostage with him. He was also in Cop Out with him. So apparently we've got a lot of Pollock Bruce Willis.
The sequel to Lucky Number 11 has to be Lucky Number Slate.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one. That's another one. Lucky Number 11. That's another, hey, we should be like Pulp Fiction movie.
We should
make a list. There's a list. I'm sure there's a list to be had. Oh, have I told people about filmsackstats.com yet?
No.
Oh, no, we need to.
Okay, filmsackstats.com. If you go there, it's kind of the sequel to Most Sacked, and it's awesome. It's this really, really well put together.
So is there site. Any movers and shakers this week that took a big move thanks to us doing the whole nine yards?
Well, let's see. I'm going to hide TV shows, and I'm going
feels
to...
like we've seen so much Bruce Willis on this show, but mm-hmm. have yeah. we?
Our number one top billed actor remains Arnold Schwarzenegger. We don't even have Bruce Willis in our top 10. Hmm. If you don't look at only top billed, our number one is Thomas Rosales Jr., who has been in a ton of shit. I don't even think we've mentioned his name before, but he's number one on the list with 17 appearances, and then Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Danny Trejo, and so on. A lot more Max von Sydow than you thought you'd seen. Stuff like that. Anyway, the new site is awesome, and it breaks down writers, decades, directors, producers, actors, genres. It's all very interactive, very cool. Absolutely worth checking. It says here, latest episode, Whole Nine Yards, Star Trek Connections 0, although we found
okay.
one.
Okay.
I guess that won't be filled in until after the show, right?
I don't know. It's a good point.
We don't give that information to them. I'm assuming they must key that part in.
He might be doing it. So here it is. Bruce Willis, total number of appearances on FilmSack, 7 is all. That seems low. I guess I'm surprised. We should probably fix that and get more Bruce Willis going on.
What was the other Michael Clark Duncan movie we watched?
Michael Clark Duncan at 2.
Armageddon? Yeah.
Armageddon, yeah.
He was in Armageddon.
Guess oh yeah,
I can never remember. Like, that's one of those ones that I thought we'd seen for the longest time, and then when we eventually did see it, I'm trying to remember if we actually did see it, if it was just.
One day long after FilmSack has ended, and the show hasn't been made, there's not a new episode of FilmSack for 15 years. I hope that the archive is only Armageddon.
Right. The most surprising thing to me was Stephanie Biddle was in Timeline. Was she an actress or was she just musical?
I don't know.
Oh,
no idea.
Really?
Biddle?
Yeah.
Is that the thing I bought this soundtrack?
The jazz singer in the Whole Nine Yards.
That device mm-hmm. that shoots warm water at my butt now. The Biddle.
Oh, and guys, the whole jazz singer bookends was really good.
I loved it.
Movie.
Yeah. It was all right. I hate that song at the end, though. I'm not a fan of that.
Oh, what? Why? Because of what it stands for?
No, I just have never enjoyed it. I just don't. It's an annoying. And I love that era.
That's a weird thing to not like. Yeah. Is a jazz
right
song.
To know. I'm going to need more background on why you don't like that.
I like jazz and old timey jazz and, you know, cabaret stuff and all that. I love it. That song in particular, though, annoys the hell out of me. And that rendition even more so. I didn't like it.
I loved it.
Well, look, we can all have things we love.
Last week at the Oscars, I was rooting against This Is Me for Best Original Song, and everybody thought it was going to win, and it should have, by all rights, won, but I was rooting against it, and a friend of mine was just offended that I was rooting against This Is Me, like the feel-good song of the winter or something.
What was This Is Me? What movie was that from?
Greatest Showman.
Oh, yeah, I never saw that.
And it is a great song, and it is very uplifting, and it's gone a long way, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But I live in a place where we get micro-targeted ads for your consideration advertisements. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, This Is Me was advertised to me every 5 minutes for 3 weeks.
So is this the one? This is the one with the Walmart-looking lady, the curly hair kind of bigger lady? Is that the song?
Walmart looking lady.
Well,
he did
right.
a commercial for Walmart interspersed during the Oscars, oddly enough.
Yeah.
That might be where you're making that.
Maybe. She looks like somebody. She looks like somebody I'd see at a Walmart for whatever reason.
Her name is Keala Settle, and she's fantastic.
Oh, no. She was belting it out, man.
The bearded lady, right?
Yeah.
Yes, in the movie.
No. When she got up and sang, that's literally when I stopped doing everything because I've been told in my life. Don't stop until the fat lady sings, and I stopped. Everything I was doing, I stopped right then.
But there were like two big upsets this year at the Oscars.
Send your emails too.
Please. Please do.
I couldn't resist. That's funny.
There were two huge upsets at the Oscars. Icarus beating Faces Places and this thing.
I don't even know what category Icarus and Faces. And I watched the Oscars and I even had
those were short films.
Long form documentary.
Oh, Icarus was the doping, the Russian doping thing.
That win or lose? That won, didn't it?
Icarus won.
Yeah, that one won. Because Russians are all freaking drug heads, potheads.
Because that was one vote they couldn't control. Yeah,
oh my gosh, Emmett, that was funny. Wow. The one vote they couldn't buy or control.
I'll take some of those emails now. Thank you very much.
That was really good.
Redirect.
A lot of people agree with you. Anyway, filmstats.com or filmsacstats.com. It's awesome. Anyway, go check that out. All right. What else? I guess that's it. Oh, no. Wait. The Flies. I was curious about The Flies. Found out.
Mm. Oh, yeah. This trivia on this one is pretty interesting.
So I guess the house they were filming in was full of flies, whether they liked it or not. It was just part of the production problem. And so when they started showing up in scenes like Matthew Perry trying to blow one out of his face and all that, they decided, whatever, just play with it. Let's just go with it. And they did that. And what I noticed later is when they weren't in that house anymore, they were still having flies buzz around. Making sounds, I mean, not showing on camera. It's like somebody said, oh, well, we have to keep this fly theme up. And then they just stopped doing it. So that's why it's chicken the bucket for me. Because it was just like, flies, more flies.
But didn't they imply that it ended when they killed Gogliak? Wasn't he the fly around all the problems?
Oh, was that supposed to be? You and your mythological... Water means something.
As he was dying, there was a fly around him, and then Amanda Peet blew away the final fly in the final scene where it happened, and that was it, right? That was the last time it showed up. I was assuming. I assume that the trash was taken out at that point.
Listen, can you imagine a more? I can't just standing there naked with a fly buzzing around you. That's just awful.
Yeah.
Nobody wants this.
That's regularly for me though.
Right. Every time I
take off my clothes.
What do the flies come out or do they appear?
Yeah, they come out. That too.
They see my name three times. I take off my clothes and flies buzz
right.
out of my mouth.
They come buzzed out and they're gasping for air.
Maybe not my mouth.
Yeah. You're the candy man.
Like we're inventing the new thing that grossed out Scott the most. It's like while talking on the podcast, grossed out Scott the most.
Yeah. Also, just micro images of Matthew Perry's teeth and tongue and all that. I didn't need that. I didn't need that in my life. I could have gone on without it.
Those opening segments a little rough. That was one of the other things I wrote down for what grossed Scott out the most.
Yeah, but for me it's barf breath.
Why is squeezing toothpaste out of a tube gross? I don't know why, but just in that opening
because it was too big.
Anything with a macro lens.
Yes, it's gross because what you're seeing is you're seeing physics and nature in a way that you don't normally have to view it. So you end up seeing it looks like a big poo coming out of the back of that thing.
I was going to say, imagine that instead of fluorescent blue, it was brown, and that's why it's gross to look at.
Yeah, he's making a poo.
There are definitely things that if you get up close, they're beautiful. You get to see crystalline structures you wouldn't have otherwise, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I'm telling you, like, we have these beautiful snails in this neighborhood, and they're, like, everywhere you go in the morning, they're crossing the sidewalk. They're beautiful snails. A friend of mine got a macro lens, put it on his iPhone, got up close to a snail. Ugly.
Oh, yeah.
Scary ugly.
Yeah. I've never heard anyone say the phrase beautiful snails, but then I would also
say... They're gorgeous. They're colorful. They're these beautiful big swirls. They're large. They're like the size of a 50-cent piece. This kind of thing.
Fry those up. But the reason I say that is it's a good band name. Beautiful Snails is a good band
beautiful
name.
Beautiful Snails. Okay. Oh, yeah, no kidding. Somebody should take that.
Yeah, I would totally do that if I was starting a band, but I'm not. Okay, then the other thing I wanted to say was I don't know where he lives up there in Canada, but those lawns are too big, and I wouldn't want to mow them. It's just the one thing I noticed is a lot of lawn between him and Bruce Willis's house. And a lot of slope going on. And all I could think of is I don't care how good your mower is, unless it's a riding one, F it. F off. I'm not mowing
your
lawn.
It was needed by the story, right? You needed to have a lot of distance so people wouldn't hear gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the countryside outside of Montreal felt like it was where billionaires live.
Yeah, it was crazy. The other thing I noticed is this is a thing movies like its ilk do, and it ruins it for me. It makes this mistake of being this kind of fun, kind of off the wall, slapsticky kind of thing for most of the movie. And then it makes this mistake in the last third or quarter where it just takes itself too seriously. Where suddenly Matthew Perry's making very serious faces about how
I actually liked how it went from being a and this is what I think about The Yards, Scott. I think that's a reason because we're kind of implying that Bruce Willis's character is in a witness relocation, and so he's moving to like a little suburban area, which was kind of a popular idea even throughout the 90s. You ever see My Blue Heaven?
Yeah, oh yeah.
With Steve Martin and Rick Moranis, where he's, you know, he's a mob informer and he ends up trying to lay low in a community such
arugula.
As that. So,
you know,
arugula.
Good, it might be my favorite, you know what? Might be my favorite hitman outside of the hitman world movie
right.
of all time.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything more than that movie.
That movie's
and
really great.
Steve Martin is so over the top, but it's not, it doesn't feel as distracting as Roseanne Arquette's fake French accent.
No, that right. made me want to
speaking
die.
Of, speaking of Steve Martin, and he played one of the greatest dentists of all time.
Yeah, I was gonna, you know, it's funny.
We're talking about horrors.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that one.
You know what? So I am my walk of film shame. Still never seen Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, you should totally see both of them. See the old one and the more recent one.
The Corman one over there, kind of. You could kind of disagree. Skip the Corman one. It's so slow and painful.
Wait, that's a Roger Corman.
Yeah.
Thing? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds
it was one
like
of his first.
Something we should
and, watch. And also one of the first appearances of Nicholson, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Of Jack Nicholson?
It was one of the first times I had seen him, other than One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think that was my first.
Oh, wait. Well, how old is that? That's old then.
80s, early, right? Maybe late 70s.
Probably.
78, something like that.
Yeah, because if you're talking 80s, Nicholson was established by then. He was killing it by then.
Oh, but not the Little Shop of Horrors. It was older.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's a lot older, right? Had to be.
But I did like the way it went into a...
Eating a corn nut? What is that? Is that a corn nut?
What is it?
It changed into a heist movie.
Yeah, but the film snack.
No, the film snacks.
I'd actually taken a drink out of my drink and an ice cube came in with it.
Ice. Okay. It sounded like a corn nut.
I couldn't get the ice back out. And so it was like I'm gonna swallow this or I gotta chew it really quick. One of the two. Something's gonna happen.
Yeah, you gotta go. You gotta pick your poison and just go for it. I get it.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, you were saying. I didn't mean to.
I liked the fact that it turned into kind of like a heist movie near the end. You know,
I don't mind the heist part. I just think they took themselves too seriously. It was like Matthew Perry suddenly got all, "I really do love you, and we should be together." And it's just, I don't know. It sounded shitty at the end. It just wasn't as fun at the end as it could have been.
Right.
That's all. I like the heist. I like the plan. I like screwing everybody over. I like the mom and the wife getting hosed. I liked all that. I just thought, I don't know. I just got too like rom-com at the end. I don't know.
Well, right. And there's also like, I hate to call for realism in a movie like this, but there's a point where Bruce Willis has just been killing everybody. And oh, wow. He even just killed Michael Clark Duncan. Like you realize, oh, he's a killer and he may as well have killed everybody he came into contact with.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that kind of made you question the whole time. And because they made a very specific action to make all of these characters likable, even though you shouldn't like them.
Yeah.
You shouldn't like a killer, a hitman. You shouldn't like it at
That's
all.
That's at least two times now that Bruce Willis's character has gotten Michael Clark Duncan's character killed in a movie or is at least responsible for it. You know, because he didn't overtly kill him in Armageddon, but he's pretty much responsible for him dying up there.
And if you watch the deleted scenes of The Green Mile, you
can see. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that too.
True story. But who's responsible for animal crackers in Liv Tyler's belly button? Who really?
That, we got to
give that.
No, we give
Michael
that to
Bay.
Yeah, Michael Bay. Michael Bay. There's no Clark Duncan on the end of that, Michael. He knows exactly what he was doing there. All right, I'm going to play some clips if you guys are inclined to hear them.
Sure.
There's not a ton because it's kind of a movie that, you know, has a few, but, you know, it's not
there's
like
a lot of visual stuff that doesn't translate well to audio clips, probably.
I agree, but I like this sound effect. pretty good. It's pretty useful.
Yeah, I have a Casio keyboard as well.
I was very dumb use of that in there. But anyway, here's the best car beating on Film Sack history. So we've ever, I don't know if we've ever had a good car beating, but this is a beating of a car that I really enjoyed. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Actually, that whole bit of him, like, just hating his life and doing that, even while he's in the middle of driving down the road, and they're just going back to normal. That I kind of, you know, there was some slapstick that I think worked really well, and Matthew Perry is kind of the master of it, especially falling into lamps and behind couches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I thought was really well done. And
I agree. It made me laugh. I'll give him credit there. Here's a weird sound he made, and it was right when he found out who Bruce Willis was, and he made this sound. That's it.
Okay.
He goes, oh,
okay. Wow.
Okay.
Here's Bruce Willis's laugh, which I found kind of grating. Kind of annoyed me.
Yeah,
so
that was pretty bad.
Maybe you want to drink some Seagram's wine coolers.
Yeah, me too.
That was about the era, right, for that?
It was, yeah.
Here was Hollywood, Planet Hollywood a thing then?
Earlier than that. What's that?
When was Planet Hollywood the big deal for them? For him?
Mid-90s, early 90s,
right?
Okay. Yeah. I think by then, maybe they were done with that. I can't remember.
I think so.
Here's this horrible accent.
You pig! You disgust me! There's a known killer living right next door who might slaughter us in our sleep, and you won't even lift a finger!
That's right!
I hate it so bad. I hate it.
Really bad.
I hate it so much. You could
have
hired anybody.
I couldn't figure out what they were going for there. Were they trying to be comedically bad?
I don't know. It's not fair to her though. She's a good actress. She's done good work. She didn't need this.
She was in her life. She was great as a Who in Whoville.
Oh, she a Who in Whoville?
I was kidding. No, I don't think so.
You know, desperately seeking Susan. Name another really good Roseanne Arquette role.
Maybe I'm thinking of Patricia Arquette.
About the Arquettes? None of them look alike.
No, they all feel like they have different parents. Isn't that weird?
That is really weird. I don't know.
The blonde sister doesn't look anything like the others. What's his name? Arquette looks like nobody. But think of this. Chandler's wife is being played by the sister of the ex-husband of the woman he eventually married on Friends.
There probably is.
Kevin Bacon was in both things or something like that.
You know who else doesn't look alike, Brian? Is all the Jones in Hollywood, like Doug Jones and Duncan Jones and Rashida Jones. they don't look anything like Catherine Zeta-Jones.
But they're not related. These guys are all actual brothers and sisters, I thought. Aren't they?
Yes, they are.
They're all related.
There's no Arquette that you've heard of that is not related to all the other Arquettes you've heard of.
But these three in particular are definitely related. Randy's making the example of a bunch of Joneses who have nothing to do with each other.
They have something to do with each other. They have something to do with each other.
All right, fair enough. Here's, I miss him here.
I'm sorry. I must have the wrong
room. What room are you looking for?
Oh my gosh, listen to that guy talk.
That voice.
What room are you looking for?
Dave does not exist.
Oh man, that's so good.
That was one of my favorite. I love that scene.
Yeah, it's good. He's just so.
We still have Ving Rhames.
We
still have Tiny Lister.
It's also slightly racist to say we still have Ving Rhames, but it's fine.
No, I mean, it's the same kind of character that we.
Pulp Fiction effect. You've got us all.
Well, the reason I say it is everybody I talk to can't keep them straight. They don't know which one's which. So they'll
say,
Ving Rhames was so good in the Green Mile. And
I'm raising my hand because I know I've made that mistake a million times.
Really? Michael Clark Duncan, maybe I love him too much. Maybe that's the problem.
Prior to looking up IMDb when I was watching Whole Nine Yards, if you would have said, who was in Armageddon, I would have said, oh, it's Ving Rhames. But no, it's like, okay, that one's Michael Clark.
Hold on a second. Dunaway, sorry, you posted something in the chat, a photo of three dudes with their shirts off. Is that also from that Big Tooth movie?
No, it's not.
Okay,
that was a response to Randy's a bashing of Smoking Aces. And I'm like, but dude.
That defends Smoking Aces?
That guy in the middle.
But it was a comment towards the stereotyping.
Oh, right. But the guy in the middle, the actor in the middle, is that's Beanfork from 310 to Yuma. I freaking love that guy. Guy from Lost.
Yeah.
The Blob from X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I love him. Oh, my gosh. That's one of my favorite dudes who I don't know his name, but he's so good. All right. Here's another weird sound that someone made. That's when he was like, don't hit me anymore.
Just about any weird noise is going to be Chandler. That's going to be Matthew.
He sounds like you aggroed a like troll in a Diablo game.
Yeah, totally. It's like a Murloc with a cold or something.
That's awesome. That needs to be in a video game. Yeah, that's an aggro sound.
Swear words right there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. All right, here's some.
You mind if I piss a little blood first?
Ugh. Oh, yeah. I do mind, actually, if you piss a little blood first. If you're asking the truth, I do mind. Here's a, I don't know what this is, a rodent?
A rodent.
Oh, you put the T way at the end.
Here it comes. Wait for it.
What a weird thing to have
him do. So easily just had Kevin Pollak be, you know, do the just regular Kevin Pollak voice. It would have been just fine. They didn't need to have him have a weird
I didn't get that either. They didn't go deep enough into that. If you're gonna dig into it, dig deep. So yeah, the V's were W's and the J's were Y's.
Yes,
it doesn't make any sense.
Go all the way or don't do it at all.
Right. This halfway thing is dumb. All right, 90% normal talk, 10% your words are wrong. I don't get that. It's not
right.
It's not. Mm-mm. It's not just funny. It's kind of just perplexing. It's like, why? What?
It's just sad.
It is just sad. It's just,
I want to cry right now.
Here's a we like on this show when there's somebody barfs loud. So here's a loud barf. It's not really that accurate, but whatever.
That was an interesting.
Yeah, that's not what barfing sounds like.
No, yeah. No. I'm a loud barfer, but I don't do that. Especially the.
That's the barf and clear your throat simultaneously. Going on there.
Yeah, brush your teeth for 2 days at least before you make out with Natasha. Say the name of the movie.
That's why Jimmy wants to kill you, because if he kills you...
And Yanni, let's not forget about Yanni.
Then he gets the money. All of it.
The whole 9 yards.
The whole 9
It's like almost whispered, like there. Oh, it was. You gotta say the name of the movie? All right, I'm gonna whisper it.
Yeah, just say it really quiet. The guy's name, his name being Yanni, just threw me the whole time, because...
You're thinking he's gonna come out with a mullet and a guitar?
Yeah, I did. In a white suit, you know?
Yeah.
I went to a Yanni concert.
Yanni didn't have a guitar. What did he play?
No, he just had regular keyboards and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
But I played, or I saw him in concert, an outdoor concert in Park City once, and I have regrets about that. I did not. I did not enjoy myself very much. And also,
can I go home now?
Traffic was garbage. I remember that day just being so bad. And we blew a tire, and we didn't get home till like 2.
Oh, so it wasn't Yanni's fault. Are you blaming your flat tire on Yanni?
Yes. All flat tires.
Was he on a double billing with Zamfir?
No. No, but good call. It may have been. May have actually had John Tesh there, yeah. It may have actually had an opener by John Tesh.
John Tesh always says the greatest advice.
Does he?
What's
his advice? He has a show with advice? What is it?
Just every week he's always, it's like he does a little music countdown, then he gives you a little advice.
What's this from? Where can I get this?
Yeah. Like satellite radio or
something? Yeah, I think it is on Sirius.
Is on Sirius Radio? Sirius yeah. FM? Whatever.
And then he gives advice?
Let's see. John Tesh show. Yeah, I've heard it. Not on purpose, but I've been like flipping through, you know, the channels and going, oh, let's listen to this. And that's some decent music. And then John Tesh will come on and give you the latest weight loss advice.
Here's a question. If you were just shuffling all of Spotify, what are you listening to right before Spotify throws John Tesh in your face?
Right. I don't listen to Spotify in that capacity, but yes.
Okay, but what would it be? What were you listening to?
That's a good question. What were you listening to up to the point that John Tesh would come on Spotify? If John Tesh was on Spotify?
He is.
I want to say maybe some Metallica. Probably Metallica.
So the show is called Intelligence for Your Life. It's a nationally syndicated radio show. So you can go to Tesh.com and see where it's showing, where it's playing, but in your area. But it's also apparently there's a podcast.
Okay.
And
you know what those are.
They're tabs instead of, I mean, they've got like About Us, Concert Dates, Podcast, Find the Show, blah, blah, blah. Then they have another set of tabs for just topics that they talk about called Sleep, Health, Money, pets.
That's the ones always catch.
Okay.
Pets or money?
No, sleep.
I want to know his advice.
Because it works. Every time he talks about sleep, I'm out.
He conks you right out.
Why is your dog so fat is one of their things.
Really? I can tell you. Yeah. Feed him too much. That's why.
The do not touch zones of cats.
Well, that's just a fact. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Anus, foot, belly.
Exactly.
Well, I don't need John Tesh to tell me that. But
sure. I love this.
That's pretty great to hear what
I
he's
doing.
I
love the fact that he like plays music and then he gives advice. Like I'm just picturing him like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then he stops playing and turns to the camera and says, you know, pickles.
That's pretty much how it goes.
Pickles have a shelf life.
You know what?
You not that, ingest pickles.
I want the music to play. I want it to be the NBA theme he made, and then that. And then have it turn off and go, listen, we've all had a cat. Don't touch his anus.
Let me tell you about the five places on a cat you should never touch. And then it says that, and then it goes back to.
I have that theme somewhere, but I can't find it. Anyway, whatever. Let's play this. Have you heard a worse sound than this? Okay, there's more.
Man.
Here comes the second time.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's PTSD inducing.
Ooh. Yeah, I can't even. I'm supposed to have a dental appointment on Tuesday. Actually, I have to cancel it. I'm not that sad. Not because
of watching this movie.
Not
like,
because
nope.
Of this.
Nope.
It's definitely not because of this, but I'm kind of glad, to be honest. Here's best lady laugh in the movie. Here you go. There you go. There's that.
Amanda Pete.
Yeah.
Such a dork. Love it.
There's another one.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
That part made me laugh. A few parts did. The fart made me laugh. Here's that scene. They're trying to be all quiet in there. Matthew Perry farts. I don't know. Good fart joke always works on me. And whatever this means.
I hired you.
What?
I hired you.
I hired you.
Really?
But in French.
I hired you.
I hate it so much.
Eric absolutely should have requested another take.
Yes, dude.
There were times it didn't feel like there was a director present.
Like you just left a note on the kitchen counter saying, here's what I need you guys to do.
Right. Here's the camera scenes today.
The camera's running.
Shot list. Good luck.
So dumb. All right. Well, that's it for that. How about one of these here deals? Film Sack checklist goes like this. Those were almost Kathy Griffin's boobs. Check. Ooh.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, you know, no offense.
But can't imagine her in the role of Amanda Pete.
No. No. It would have been the wrong choice.
I don't want that idea in my head, and you know why.
Mm. No, I know why.
Okay. I know. All right.
Bruce Willis looks dumb in an Andy Cap hat. Check. And
I like the hat.
It's like Breaking Bad, but more dumb. Check. All right. hey, Trek stuff. There is one person. So it turns out I do have one connection. Gerald Quist. He is Bruce Willis's, at least on this film, personal makeup artist. He just sat there and did his makeup for shots and things. There's nothing fancy going on, just makeup for camera. On TNG, though, he was a makeup artist for the first six seasons of Star Trek TNG, looks like, and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, he also did makeup work on. So he does both Klingon faces and Bruce Willis faces. So,
in either case, there's a lot of forehead to work with.
He also says here he created Armus, the oil slick, in the TNG first season episode Skin of Evil. Isn't that the one that killed...
That's the one that kills Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
How do you create an oil slick? All right. What I need here is some
well, if you're Baldwin, you go swimming.
Yeah.
Nah.
He got eight Emmy nominations during his time on TNG and won two of them. That's pretty good.
Speaking of hair products, that one scene with Matthew Perry and Mike Clark Duncan when they're sitting there and they got that weird Batman angle going on, the camera shot, there's just so much product in his hair.
Oh, yeah, like, tons.
I thought we were done by 2000 with that much product.
No, he's a hitman. Those guys lay it in thick. That's how they do it.
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't look at Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. He's okay. Slytherin. Hey, soundtrack gate. Great. He really does. He looks like the kid.
He does. Yeah.
Slytherin kid.
Malfoy.
Yeah, Draco.
Malfoy.
Totally Draco Malfoy. All right. What's this here? Oh, soundtrack gate. I give it a barely there. I really don't remember it.
I love the soundtrack. But you hated it.
It was so left over. We have all this stuff left over from other 90s films that we cut on, left on the cutting room floor. The saxophone.
Yeah. So it's like, here, take whatever you need from the floor. We don't need this anymore. Exactly. Make your movie with it. It just was kind of not memorable. I mean, the jazz stuff, it's fine. I hate that last song, but we've already discussed that. Let's do
stand up, and we've discussed
it. Yeah, we still don't get why, but I hated it. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys in 280 characters or less sum up this film in the way you know best. Let's start with Randy.
The whole nine yards, a perfectly forgettable little comedy from a simpler time when Matthew Perry was still a thing. This movie is so forgettable that I've already
muted yourself. I mean, forgotten it. Well done.
Did Matthew
also him. Brian Dunaway,
the whole nine yards, this movie, it'll kill you for a quarter. Hashtag no mayo. Hashtag there will be mayo.
I forgot about the mayo reference.
Yeah, like that was not a funny running joke.
Nope.
I don't understand. Like, I guess the screenwriter went to Montreal and found a lot of mayonnaise. And
was that a thing?
It would have been funnier if it wasn't drilled home so much.
Yeah. Right. Ah, drilled home.
Yeah. Oh, well done. Well done. But hold on. Is mayo a thing? If I go to Montreal, they're going to be mayo on everything? Is that the
Well, on your fries and probably your burger.
Oh, that is gross.
So, yes, the answer is yes. So,
I'm just saying.
So both these guys are from Chicago, right? And there's always, in Chicago, they're quite sure of how they like their food, right? Isn't that their, like,
I don't know.
Jam? Don't know. Aren't they like, oh, you don't make hot dogs like this, you do it like this.
Well,
if you do it any other way,
they got
it's
the
wrong.
Whole deep
if
dish
only
pizza.
They had portrayed it like that, then it could have been funny.
There you go, right. Have it be a deep dish pizza or hot dogs or something like that.
I love the idea, though. If I go to Montreal, is there going to be a lot of mayonnaise? Well, only on all the food.
right. It's only there.
It's only there everywhere. All right.
They don't put it on pasta, but...
yeah. Ugh, that sounds awful. Brian Hibbett, you've rounded out here.
Sure. The whole nine yards. The whole nine... Boings, the whole nine... And the whole nine... However the hell you spell those.
That's pretty good.
I'm gonna need to see those Twitters.
You were at least two of the Three Stooges just then. That was really oh, now we got all three. Well,
there you go.
Finished it out.
There's the hat trick.
Yeah, nicely
let's
done.
Let's all impersonate our favorite Marx brother. I'll be Harpo.
All right, you be Harpo and don't say a word. This just handed me. We have some alternate titles on this card. It was just handed to me here. These were what they almost were. It was almost called, But Mom, Do I Have to Mow the Whole Nine Yards? Get it? Because there's like nine yards of mowing lawns. All right, anyway.
Yeah.
And then almost called Feels Like a Whole 9 Hours. All right, there you go.
Dude.
It's pretty good. All right, email address from Daniel Lindholm came to us at filmsack@gmail.com, and he says the following words in typewritten form. Hello, Filmsackers. Your show saved my life after the terrible tsunami that happened here in Japan. March 11th, 2011. It was a crazy day for sure, and my wife was over in Korea for an insane amount of shopping. Meanwhile, I was witnessing... That's a weird little jab about the shopping.
Insane amount of shopping.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I was witnessing the nuclear power plant in the Fukushima area exploding, crazy Alex Jones spinning his leftover brain, and I'm trying to process the best information to make sure I was doing everything correctly to survive. But one thing was missing, happiness in hard times. That's when I opened up to the podcast app for the first time, typing in my favorite words, movies, and your show was on top. I told myself that's a nice play on words. With my Swedish humor still intact, I browsed for some episodes and landed on Above the Law. The sound and presentation, the silky voice of Scott Fletcher as a mix of Kermit the Frog and God. I was laughing again. He says, thanks, guys, for making my life on the other side of the world a joy. Loved the Die Hard episode and had to brace myself for Little Richard. You are married. Woo! Joke. You're with me everywhere I go when I travel. The FilmSack crew keeps me in the best spot every day. With best regards, Daniel Lindholm. Is that a nice email?
feels so good.
Very nice email.
Yeah, that guy gets around. Swedish guy in Japan, his wife shopping in Korea. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah.
Can you believe it's been 7 years? Seven years exactly since that tsunami?
That's crazy. That feels like, seriously, like not 5 minutes ago. That's nuts. Time's weird, guys. I keep saying this everywhere I go, but time's weird. Something's wrong with it. My perception of it's all broken.
I mean, like, I remember exactly where I was. I remember being glued to the television, like, for days.
Yeah.
It's just amazing that it was that long ago, and the memories are still so clear.
Yeah. 2011 feels like yesterday, but it was ages ago.
Yeah.
And I'm glad nothing else blew up. Everything's fine over there now, right? Don't they have that all locked down until there's another earthquake?
They have a never-ending ecological disaster really, really close to the Fukushima reactors. But yeah. other than that,
everything's fine.
Just don't have any more earthquakes, guys.
Yeah. You can control that, right? That's a thing that Japan can control. So good luck. And hopefully Daniel Lindholm will not be near the ground zero next time it happens. There you go. That's our email, and you can send emails to filmsack@gmail.com. Our next film is, I don't know, what is it?
What, the movie we're watching next week. Oh, you guys, you know the one. It's the Money Pit.
Money Pit. The house.
Hold on a second.
Let me look for my DVD. I have it over here somewhere.
Oh my god. We're on a string of middle-aged comedies right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so.
The Money Pit is probably going to be the last of that string, and we're going to watch some action movies after this, but
it's kind of
funny.
We're going from a movie where the two main characters got their big break on TV shows and then went into movies, and the next thing we're going to watch is a movie where
Tom Hanks and Shelley Long.
Exactly, yeah.
By the way, this movie is a slog, but it is something that I have fond memories of.
I don't think it's a slog. I liked it. I always liked it.
This is a stressful movie for me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's meant to be, right? Like, it's supposed to give you that anxiety, especially as a homeowner, but I have fond feelings for it. So.
Yeah, well, anything with Yakov Smirnoff can't be that bad.
Yeah.
Guys.
I like how you say his name, Yakov Smirnoff. I always said Yakov. Is it not Yak? Is it Yak?
That is Yakov, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you jock off?
I like Snarky Randy. We've got Snarky Randy all day today.
No. Okay.
I'm just saying, you know, podcast listeners, they love debates about how to pronounce something.
They do. It goes all the way back to Herb and Herb. It's never quite left us. Well, all right, then. That's the next movie we're going to do. Come back for the Money Pit next week right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, go to filmsack.com. You can comment, be part of the blog. There's comments are turned on there, boy. You can just say whatever you want and have your way. You can also find us on Twitter @FilmSack, and you can leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. And again, that email address is filmsack@gmail.com. We love your feedback and can't wait for more. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian. And for Randy.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
We'll see you next time.
I either do.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
I either do.
I'm not going to have the consciousness to think about, I'm laughing, I better push to talk. You come in on a midlife.
Brian, they call that's push to laugh. They call that
push to laugh.
POL exactly. Or PTL.
PTL.
Just step away from the mic to laugh.
Yeah. Now,
hey, when does Ready Player One come out? Does it come out next weekend?
No, it's the 2 days before April Fool's, which is so weird.
That is weird.
That is weird. So 30th. Okay. Merch. March 30th.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I have a lot of reasons to like and be excited about that, but the main reason I want that to come out is so I can get Dunaway's take on the latest Spielberg production.
You're not going to like it.
Probably not.
Already.
I've already packed my luggage, and I'm going to the theater with all kinds of baggage.
Mm, yeah.
Sweet.
It's like, how can you race a DeLorean when you get to 88 miles per hour? You'll just disappear. It makes no sense.
Well, it's in your virtual world, see?
It's still a DeLorean.
No.
88 miles per hour.
Yeah, but you program that any way you want. There's a DeLorean in Rocket League, and I don't go back in time in there.
That's Rocket League, Scott.
I do leave a trail of flames, which is
this
cool.
This is a Spielberg production.
Well, he produced the original Back to the Future.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. Your issues go way back. It's not even about a new movie.
What part of my luggage didn't you understand? I got baggage.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.